This call is being recorded.
Talking to my people, yeah.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me, people.
life is. What's with your life?
Running like a rare disease.
Running like a rare disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself. Ghetto people. Ghetto people.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they call themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say Ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, peace to you. Hope you're having a great day. Hope you had a good day yesterday. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, needed to do, must do, should do, better do. And I hope that the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it wasn't, of course, you got it done anyway, because that's the kind of person you are. You don't procrastinate. You don't put off things for another day that you're going to do today. You get it done. You take care of business. That's right. You put management on stuff. That's the kind of brother or sister you is. I got you. This is African Perspectives, and we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times I'm going to give are Eastern times, so you make the necessary adjustments. Of course, if it's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, it's 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time. But if you can't listen live, you can go to our archives on timeforanawakening.com, timeforanawakening.com. On the right side, scroll down, you'll see the red, black, and green lion and with Africa in it. Hit that, and then you can check out some of the previously recorded programs. They're all dated and titled. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And right after that, Acres of Diamonds is a public affairs programming out of Philadelphia. Then right after that, Let's Buy Black 365. 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., and it's also simulcast on Facebook. Tonight, Wednesday, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., Revive with Sister POC, Revive. Tomorrow night, Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa, Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, Family-Centered Economics, and we're coming off of our successful 5th Annual ULU Power Summit, and of course, we have opened up the Cafe, Cafe ULU, 2036 Sylvan Road here in Atlanta in the Sylvan Plaza. And check them out. Open Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. So check out Cafe ULU. And you can go online to check out Cafe ULU, Cafe, CafeULU.com. And truly go to the website to check out the 5th Annual Power Summit at usliftingus.com, usliftingus.com, and you can listen to the replay, view the video stream on that website of usliftingus.com. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern time, it's time for an awakening. It is time for an awakening, brothers and sisters, with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. Sports Talk from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. and then Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. No, it is not Brother Oshi. It is Sister POC, Revive, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. And then Sunday evening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, it is Time for an Awakening at 7 p.m. Tuesday, yesterday, last night, Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank, is going to be on Tuesdays, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And last night was the first broadcast. Finally, we got it. Finally got it done, and it sounded great, Dr. Rogers. Thank you, Brother Elliot, and all those involved, Brother Kwaku, and, of course, his guests and so forth. So listen every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. Brother Bomani Tahimbe with Africa for the Africans. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. And Africa is spelt with a C. So AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Check him out. He's got a tour going to Africa, inexpensive, in May. I know it's getting kind of late. But, hey, you can still jump on it. The tour package includes round-trip fares from Atlanta to Accra, Ghana, transportation and tours, daily morning exercise and meditation, daily continental breakfast and gourmet dinner, naming ceremony and ancestral celebration, hotel accommodations, double occupancy, business and investment conference, and entrance to all sites and activities. You're going to go to the dungeons and all kind of go to Kumasi, to the village. So you can call the brother. You can call Brother Bomani, 404-931-9429. Also, you can check him out on Facebook. You can see some of the photos of his previous tours. And that's facebook.com/Bomani. Or you can check out the videos on YouTube. Check out the videos on YouTube. Go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. And Bomani is spelled B-O-M-A-N-I. Africa for the Africans. April 14th, the 21st Century Black Survival Conference, brought to you by Straight Black Pride. Straight Black Pride. And they're dealing with four particular areas of spirituality, culture, and survival. The spirituality component will be dealt with by the master teacher, Oshua Kwesi. And if you haven't checked out Oshua Kwesi, I suggest you go to YouTube and check out Oshua Kwesi and the tours he's been running, going to Kemet, and the information he provides. Outstanding. African History and Spirituality, the Origins of the Bible and Quran, will be dealt with by Brother Oshua Kwesi. Culture, Baba Mwali Mubarudi. Brother Mwali Mubarudi, good friend, Baba Barudi, will talk about a warrior's character. Survival will be dealt with by the Irritated Genie, African Survival in the 21st Century. That is April 14th. April 14th at the Shrine of the Black Madonna right here in Atlanta. And you can call and talk about the tickets and so forth. There are tickets to the event. Also, too, I'm going to constantly talk about that power conference because there are a couple of entities that I want to consistently bring to your attention. One is, of course, is the Ledge Group, L-E-D-G-E, Group, L-L-C, Ledge Group, and Ledge stands for Land for Environmental Development of Group Economics. The brothers and sisters, Brother Peter Brown and Brother Yancey Johnson, have gone to the continent. They are doing work. They're doing work in Kenya. There are other places that have prospects of doing work. What they're doing is taking the land with the brothers and sisters that are there and helping them grow food on the land. They're bringing equipment. They're bringing know-how. They're bringing expertise. But more importantly, they're helping our people. It is being done. And I will hopefully one day get those brothers, if not both, one of them on. Brother Peter Brown or Brother Yancey Johnson. Also, too, Brother Rashid Neary, right here in Atlanta, Truly Living Well. Go to trulylivingwell.com. They're doing urban gardening, urban farming right here in the city of Atlanta. And, of course, in your city, I know that in Milwaukee, Brother Will Allen doesn't have his thing going on anymore, which is unfortunate because Will Allen is doing some great work, no doubt. We Buy Black, WeBuyBlack.com. Check out WeBuyBlack.com. Everything you need from American African-owned businesses, go to WeBuyBlack.com. If you're in the Atlanta area, you can go check him out, or We Buy Black, in the Greenbrier Mall. He might be in other ones. I don't know. He had a kiosk there with a number of products that were developed and made by us, for us. Check him out on his website. We sell on WeBuyBlack.com. Also, too, the 50th anniversary of the Republic of New Africa, and their conference is going to be at the end of this month, March 29th to April 1st in Detroit. March 29th to April 1st in Detroit, Republic of New Africa. It's a beautiful day. I hope you're having opportunity to enjoy this day wherever you are. And going to say hello to my co-host, Brother Franklin Jones. Brother Jones, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic, Brother Bubba. Shay, how you doing?
I'm doing great, brother. I'm doing good.
You sound fantastic. I was listening to you. Rolling.
Yeah, I gotta get us hyped, you know. I gotta get us going here, you know.
Oh, you got me hyped. You got me hyped listening to you.
Okay. Well, hey, let's get off to some conversation. You know, I know that I look forward to these Wednesdays, and I hope that our listeners do as well, and I hope that we get a number of calls. And, of course, the number to dial, brothers and sisters, is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. And you can join this conversation with myself and Brother Frank Jones. And we're talking about, of course, a myriad of problems. I know one of the things that we talk about is the effects of this society, the effects of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege on our everyday lives, because we have to understand this system is global. It is a global system of European Caucasian extremism globally, and what it has done to the planet and how it has affected us on the planet because of what they have done. I say it all the time, because this is Dr. John Henry Clark. We have no friends. We have no friends in the world. Everywhere we are, we're getting dogged out. We're getting humiliated. We're getting degraded. We're imprisoned. We're at the low economic rung of whatever ladder or status. We're getting dogged out. We have no friends. We want a friend, and we need a friend. And you know who that friend is? Us, yourself. When you look in the mirror, when you look at yourself, don't leave that mirror until you like what you see, not your hairstyle or the fact that your eyebrows are arched or your nose is that way. No, don't you leave that mirror until you like what you see historically, culturally, who we are as a people. Have pride in yourself. Have some confidence and trust in each other. That's where we must come from, because we live in a mean world that don't give a damn about us. But only when we begin to trust and love and respect one another will this whole situation change. Because what we've been doing is begging and pleading and marching and petitioning and sitting in and boycotting and voting. And a damn thing changed. Our condition is worse today than it was even 30 years ago plus. And you know how bad it was prior to that. We know how bad it was with the 300-some years, almost 400 years of enslavement and servitude. And right after that, and that's why, Brother Frank, that's why the people who talk about, you know, after our bondage of enslavement.
Yes.
We come into the 10 years of Reconstruction. And then right after that, we got segregation and Jim Crow. You know, and then right after that, we got the civil rights movement. And right after that, I mean, you know, it's one thing after another you know, that we try to get this society to understand and respect our humanity. And now that we have Trump in the White House, it has exacerbated the problems.
Yes, it has.
You know.
Yeah. You're absolutely right about that. Since Trump came into the House, it's like it reminds me when Barack Obama was running for president, and we kept seeing whites had this fear. There was this fear that Barack Obama would get into the House and black people lose their mind. Black people start attacking whites. But we see the opposite. We see Obama became president and blacks chilled. we're professional. We had our dignity. That's the people who we truly are. But look at when Trump came into the House. The whites the one who lost their minds. The extremists. The we're more victims now of racism than ever before, because the Trump administration has emboldened racism in this country. So it's ridiculous. I rarely even watch the news anymore. Get away from it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, because
in fact, I was watching a professional basketball player. He was being interviewed in his locker room, and he was talking about Trump's comment, calling them out, calling negative names, and putting down Africa and Haiti. And he started talking about how does he look at his daughter and talk to her about the president of the United States putting down black people that way. And this professional basketball player started to choke up, and he started to cry. Grown man. So you see, it does affect us, this prevailing racism. And it's the media is like a one-way glass, a one-way mirror. And we're only getting their narratives. So we're not hearing our counter-narratives. We're just constantly hearing their negative narratives that justifies their hatred towards us, falsely justifies it.
And because of that, there is a lot of Caucasian backlash to us, more so than it was, of course, when Obama was president.
Yeah.
You know, but the problem with the Obama presidency, it gave us an illusion that, and in fact, we didn't challenge Obama. We just, some of us were so enamored and so elated with the fact that this man is the president of the United States. You know, in fact, I remember in the first term, he was elected in 08. He took office in January of 09. And in that first term, many of our people said, don't make any waves. We want to make sure he gets reelected.
Yeah.
You know, and then once that happened, and everybody says, yeah, on the next term, oh, he'll do a lot of things for us. He didn't do jack.
He didn't do nothing. He didn't nothing at all.
No.
In fact, you're right. We lost rights under Obama that we wouldn't have under a white president because we were protest. I'll give you an example. The main one was the Federal Voter Protection Bill. And that was established in the 60s. So they removed that protection. And we sat there quiet. We didn't say a word, you know?
Yeah, that was it.
We don't want to mess with Obama. We don't mess with Obama. And to lose that federal protection bill, I mean, come on. That that was a devastating loss for black people. But it shows,
In fact, I was in Selma. I went to the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of the March of Bloody Sunday. And this was interesting because some months prior, that's when you were the bill that the Supreme Court struck down on in the voting rights happened. And, you know, I'm at the bottom of the bridge. You know, when they left Brown's Chapel and they went down that street going towards the bridge, you know, you don't see the bottom. You got to go over that hump and then you could see the bottom as you go over, you know. And when they saw at the bottom of that bridge all the police with batons and so forth and horses, you know, they marched down there anyway and got that beat down, you know. So I'm down at that very spot, and there's a marker, and of course there's the Voting Rights Museum there, and across the street there's a voter rights park, you know, with some more stuff to read and so forth. And so as I'm down there, this dude comes marching down the over the bridge, down to the bridge, and it's Rance Priebus. And Rance Priebus was Donald Trump's what do you call that? Ron Manuel was that for Barack for a while. Chief of staff, excuse me. Yep. Rance Priebus was Trump's chief of staff. You know, but at the time, of course, he was still the Republican National Committee chair. He was the Republican National Committee chair, and he has three young people with him, two American Africans and a Caucasian. And so as they descend down the hill, now I've met Rance Priebus because he was from Wisconsin. He was the Wisconsin Republican chairman. And mm-hmm. I was on a radio program with him, and I don't expect him to remember me because I don't give a damn, okay?
Yeah.
And so as he comes down the hill, I said, Rance Priebus, and he's, you know, he's startled because, I mean, you know. And so I said, you know, I was on a radio program with you back in Milwaukee. You know, oh, it's okay. But you know what? You being here is so disingenuous. When your party has been engaging with voter suppression and all kinds of tactics, and your party put pressure on that conservative Supreme Court to end some provisions in the voting. So it's disingenuous for you to be here. And I said it loud, you know, very boisterous as I can be, to make sure those young people understood who in the hell they're with and what has been happening. But of course, they're Republicans. They're young Republicans. So they're you know, they're down with that. But I just wanted to make sure that they was that they understood who this man is and what this man is about and what this Republican Party is about, you know. But since that time, the conditions and the situation for us is worse. It is getting worse.
You know, I heard the argument. I don't know. It is some relevance to it. I think there's some truth to his argument. It says that Donald Trump may not be the president that Black America wants, but he might happens to be the president that Black America needs to wake up. And they say that because under Obama, we were under a spell. We were taken by the illusion. We were taken by the illusion. The abruptness of Donald Trump, the ignorance of him, and he so ignorant as a thing before he speaks, actually it benefits us because we see who he truly is. It's like he is so ignorant that he's ripped the Band-Aid, the facade of equality off of America, and we're seeing the truth is still there. And perhaps it's better to be uncomfortably awakened than to be comfortably asleep. Because those who are uncomfortably awakened, it leads to actions. Mm-hmm. It leads to actions. So perhaps that's why he is the president that we better for. We need to wake the hell up.
Okay.
Now, I'm not complimenting the guy. I use that language to explain it because, trust me, the guy gives me a headache when he speaks. But I'm saying I since his presidency, I've run into many more Black people who are awakened. Those who during the President Obama's ministry, who felt that my language was extremist. Once Donald Trump came in the House, they listened to my rhetoric. They understand my rhetoric. They relate to my rhetoric. So I see that difference. And these were the ones who didn't want me talking about the conditions of Black people when Obama was in the House. Now these with Trump in the House, now they come forward and they're endorsing it. So. There's a pro and con to everything, and in the con of to what Trump is, the pro is it may galvanize us and wake us up to the real world. The President Obama's election did not represent the reality of America. He actually created the illusion. He benefited the image of America because he created the illusion that America was now a progressive state, moving nation moving forward. That America has put behind their racist tendencies. That was the illusion that they used. President Obama did not benefit Black America, but he benefited the American government, the image of America. The first Western nation to put a Black president, a Black head in the House. So it's part of their propaganda, their illusion, even though we know that when he signed up to protect white supremacy. That's right. Just how it works. They call That's it... Right. The national interest. He is sworn to uphold and protect the national interest, which white supremacy is embedded within national interest. So he was an agent of white supremacy, you know, merely an illusion that benefited them, not us.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. In fact, our condition under Obama became worse. More of us were imprisoned. More of us lost income. More of us were killed by the police. You know, there was such a groundswell. It's under Obama that Black Lives Matter. It's under Obama that don't hands up, don't shoot. You know, it's under Obama that all these things happened.
You know, that shows you something. Also, I remember when he got elected, the night he got elected, and I'm watching the news, and I'm seeing Black folks running and crying.
Crying, yeah.
Falling down. I'll be honest. I felt emotional watching my people crying. And if they felt a change had come. And I remember someone making statements, well, we can't complain about racism no more, saying dumb crap like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then the reality 8 years later, or during President Obama's presidency, we started seeing them shooting us down in the street, killing us. Nothing changed with a black president in the House. Nothing.
Nothing. No.
He couldn't even speak up for us.
Right.
He spoke up more strongly for the gays than he did for black people.
Yes. He chastised us. He went to various conferences or whatever, and he chastised us. You men need to take care of your women and take care of your children and, you know, all this kind of stuff, you know.
Yes, he chastised us, but he uplifted the other groups,
We have a call.
He even gave money to the Jews while he was in their millions.
Of course. They're always going to support America supports the European Jews. America, along with the other Europeans, support what the European Jews are doing in Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
America supports that. We have a caller. Go ahead, caller 267.
Hey, good morning, Brother Oshie, and good morning, Brother Franklin. How are you both?
Fine, thank you, my brother.
Doing fine, Ralph. Hey, Ralph, I'm still laughing.
I thought it was your man. I thought he was the guest last night for a little bit.
I hear you.
Especially when he started. But anyway, you know what I wanted to call. If we really want to free the minds of the African people, well, we should not look at the Democratic Party and the Republican Party as two different entities, because they're not.
Not
you know,
right.
Malcolm told us in the 60s, they're wings of the same bird. If a bird had one wing, it would fall to the ground. But both wings, they're keeping this bird, afloat. Now, I look at, and Brother Oshie, I believe I sent you this by email or maybe a text message about the Senate hearing with Larry Sinclair. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but you can YouTube it. It was a Congress or a Senate hearing where this man was under oath, and he said that he was a gay man that was supposed to be Barack Obama's partner when he was in Chicago.
Right.
I've seen it.
Now, let me tell you something. If the Republicans really wanted to beat Obama in 2008 with McCain and Palin, all they had to do was release that to Fox News.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
That's all they had to do. This was a Senate hearing. All they had to do was show that. But they didn't, which lets me know they selected that man. That man was not elected.
That's right.
And he did more harm to our community than my wife still has a picture of him and his family up on the on our refrigerator, and I look at that smile every time. But I respect my wife. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah.
But you know, and he tore a lot of families apart. And my family stopped speaking to me them first 4 years. But about that fifth or sixth year, they start saying, wait a minute.
You were
Ralph
right.
Had a point the whole time.
That's right. You were right. Ralph was right.
they didn't come out and say it. But I noticed they started coming back in my life, and the rhetoric about this man had changed.
Yeah.
You know, you were also right, Brother Franklin, when you talked about how he put every rights before us. You know, I was out in California, and I couldn't believe the way the Mexicans was looking down on the brothers and sisters under his presidency. But under his presidency, he gave them sanctuary cities. And while our brothers and sisters were still being stopped and frisked and shot down in the streets.
Yes.
But he gave immigrants that don't even have a green card, and that made me angry too when I used to hear the usual Al Sharpton and Valentine and Ron Daniels and the rest of them talking about there's a black brown coalition, we got to fight for the rights of the immigrants. I said, No.
Yeah.
So our people were being brainwashed there. Or we got to stand up for gays. No. So we seem like we put our people are brainwashed into putting everybody's interests first.
Yes.
And we don't even look at our own, man. You know, it's just like Brother Oshie, I know the topic, we're going to have to get a homeland. We're going to have to. Right now, I think I sent you this email where Ghana
right.
actually has given
yeah.
the United States
permission.
The permission without taxes to build a U.S. base there.
Yeah, military base in Ghana.
Now, if wow. that ain't AFRICOM right in their faces, I mean, who are the leaders of Ghana? So all that stuff I've been hearing the last 8 years about, like, Ghana is a good place we can go and retire. Man, I don't know. That seems like that might be a thing of the past, brother.
Well, let me just, let me
go
say,
ahead, I'm listening.
Yeah, let me say this. I think that what is happening now, though, I think there are some, even though you sent that to me, and that's the case, because I know that the influence of the West, of Europe and the United States particularly, and, of course, now China, on the African continent is very predominant, but yet they're also in conjunction with that in an African awakening. There are some members of the AU, the African Union, who are starting to look at the idea of a federated African states, looking at the idea of what Patrice Lumumba, Kwame Nkrumah, Sheikh Anta Diop, Idi Amin Dada, all of them talked about, because they understood that. Unless we unify Africa, we are going to be in serious, serious trouble. And so even though you sent me that and I did see it elsewhere, I think there's still a coming together. And that needs to be fed. That needs to be worked
right.
on. And I believe us Africans here in the United States particularly, let alone throughout the diaspora, must push for that to happen. Malcolm said, African people will never be respected until Africa is in control by Africans. Africa will be controlled by Africans.
I hear you. But Muammar Gaddafi pushed for that, and you see what happened to him.
Yeah.
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
you know,
yeah.
he was pushing for that.
Yeah.
And it was about to come, you know, it
yeah.
was about to come to pass, and you see what happened to him.
Yeah.
Yet you still have some of our people cheering Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Man, I'm just saying, free the minds of our people, man, so they can see. They cannot even see.
Yeah.
They can't see.
No.
They're just like a piece of dust that flows in the wind, man. And it's so a shame that they are like this. You know, I mean, even some of those African leaders, when Obama went over there, he told them, don't blame the West.
Right.
For you know what I mean? What
right.
nerve, because that was the West that colonized them and left them in that condition.
Exactly.
So, you know, I'm just going to leave you with this, Brother Oshie and Brother Franklin. You know, they are wings of the same bird. We should never talk about them like there's a Democrat. They're the same. They just run a game on the masses of people. And you got to remember what Barack Obama said when he first came in. He said that I'm going to follow the footsteps of my favorite president, Ronald Reagan. I mean, he said this.
Yes, he
said
did.
This. Now, we always believed that Ronald Reagan was one of the worst presidents for the African-American community, when actually it was all 45 of them.
Exactly.
But, yeah. but I still believe I've seen the most atrocities under Bill Clinton and
yeah.
Barack Obama.
Yeah.
So, we you know, let's free the minds of our people, man.
That's what we're here.
Start calling a spade.
That's right.
You know
brother.
What I mean?
That's right.
And the weather up here is terrible. We're in the middle of a nor'easter.
Another one.
12 inches of snow.
Another one.
God, so I'm off today, but I, you know, I said, let me listen to Brother Oshie, because I just like to hear the knowledge that you're trying to give to these closed-minded folks out here. I'm a lead with that, Brother Oshie.
I appreciate it, Ralph. I appreciate
right.
you very much, brother.
Take care.
Have a blessed
day. All right,
day.
Now, have a good day.
Stay dry. yeah.
You know, brother, it's absolutely right. That's right. It is two wings of the same bird. They create this illusion, you know. Democrat, Republican, Democrat, it's all about white supremacy and maintaining their white dominance. But the illusion controls our minds. Just as the voting. When we vote, we believe that we are part of the political system, but we do know that presidents are actually picked by the Electoral College, who are controlled by the white elite. So everything's an illusion, the illusion of choice. And it's all about maintaining white dominance. I mean, the reality is this.
although the U.S. government portrays itself as the leading ethical moral authority of the world and professes equality for all the citizens, at its core, it is unrelentingly committed to the preservation of its white dominance. So therefore, the U.S. government treated its black population in a manner that didn't aid in maintaining its white dominance. It would then be diametrically opposing its own objective if it was of maintaining white dominance.
That's right.
You understand how it works? The people don't realize that we're in this system, because most people aren't critical thinkers. Because most people are surface thinkers, and it's because they have a life. You have to take care of children. You got to go to work. Yeah. So you don't understand the bigger picture. But we are in a system that is designed to maintain white dominance.
And of course, it constantly gives you these illusions because they don't want you to think anything outside of that.
And
when these things happen in their favor, they want you to think that's just natural. That's just supposed to happen. You know,
yes, people don't realize. Yeah. We live in a world, we live in a scripted society where all narratives will favor whites. If not all, 98%, 99% will favor whites. That's not by some coincidence. There are a few ruling elites who control the narratives that the world and our society believes. And we function based upon those narratives. And these narratives, 99% of the time, will favor Caucasians and their agendas. And the thing is, you know, we're living under their narratives, and it produces self-hatred. They program us to turn off our collective frustrations against ourselves and away from the white dominant society. That's why we have black people walking around perceiving themselves as being their own worst enemies and thinks favorably of whites in spite of a brutal history to the contrary. It's been programmed into us. It's been indoctrinated into us all the time. And it's never been Willie Lynch. It's always been societal programming that exists within our education, exists within our media programming. We're continuously being programmed to believe that it's we who are our own worst enemy, and this keeps us from revolting against the white society.
That's why
social engineering. In fact, social engineering scientists call this process, says they call it ingraining a value system into the minds of the oppressed that makes them adhere to the infrastructure of the dominant society. These are all by design. There are books and all this stuff. And we're part of that programming.
But see, yet we don't understand. We don't.
I want to cry when I hear grown black men say, oh, it's the Willie Lynch. I want to cry because it shows that, okay, here it is now, 2018, we're still saying that. If we don't wake up and recognize the system we're in, how do we overcome it?
Yeah.
Before we can overcome it, we must understand it. We must teach. We who know must teach, and we must use the internet. We must use these podcasts like an African drum, sharing information, and never allow ourselves to become demoralized by the white man's perception of image depiction of us, because that's what he's supposed to. That's his job. His job is to keep us demoralized, divided, and self-hating. His job is to program us to believe we don't have the capabilities of overcoming oppression. That's what he's supposed to do. So we're supposed to not allow him to control our minds and keep moving forward, teaching, each one teach one. We must take control of our narratives, therefore changing the white man's narrative. Right now, we exist in a narrative imposed upon us by the white man.
And what does that narrative speak to?
It is a negative narrative. It's a narrative designed to keep our collective frustration against ourselves. And people don't recognize how this system really works. For example, you know, I'll use soldiers, for example, military soldiers. You know when we go to war and we call it Operation Freedom, Operation Rescue, Operation Saving, those narratives are not random narratives. Those narratives are thought about. Those narratives are deliberately created. The military has a department that's called psychological warfare, and it works like a marketing campaign. What you do is you put out the narrative that we are the liberators, that we are the heroes, that we are the rescuers, and people follow behind this. You tell a soldier that he is a liberator, and you impose that narrative upon him, and he believes the narrative. That soldier will then go to other countries and kill people he don't even know based upon the narrative. That soldier might even lay down his life and dies because of the narrative he's the hero. Even though the narrative is a lie, people function based upon the narrative that's been imposed upon them. This is a secret the ruling elites have known for a very long time. You continually impose narratives. If you impose positive narrative upon people, here's what happens. This lifts their self-esteem. This lifts their self-efficacy. This unifies them. It has a unifying quality, positive information. But if you continually put negative information on the people, this demoralizes them. This makes them self-hating, self-loathing. This creates disunity among them. And this is a system they're using against us. They continuously bombard us with false narratives that are designed to demoralize us and turn our collective aggression inward against ourselves and away from them. And this is taught in the military, is taught in the CIA, the FBI, and their academies. It says to suppress a targeted group and subdue them, you must convince them that their problem is an internalized one. And is it not the case that millions of black people are walking around believe that it is themselves their own worst enemy? It is not a coincidence. It is by design.
That's why I hate that. That's why I hate that term with a passion. I hate when we say that, you know, and I had to, you know, and I really felt bad because I jumped on an elder, you know, at a gathering. We were showing the movie 1804 on the Haitian Revolution, and we had some discussion afterwards. And I can't remember the context, but when he said that, you know, I had to apologize to him because I hate when our people say we are our own worst enemy. Number one, you got to understand what an enemy is. And once you understand what an enemy is, and that's something, entity or persons that or group that works against your best interest. In fact, they're trying to eliminate you. They're an enemy. Everything that you try to do, they try to destroy you from doing. Okay? That's an enemy. And then to say that we're our own worst enemy, that means we're even worse than those who put us in this condition.
Yeah. Crazy.
You know, it is crazy because it gives you the psychology that you hate yourself so much. And because that has been done to us, look at what we do to ourselves. Look at what we do to our physical being with skin bleaching creams, color contacts for our eyes, weave and all kinds of hair. I mean, I was watching women's basketball. There were 10 sisters on the court. 10 on that game. Every one of those sisters' hair was going down the back, almost touching their ass. I'm like, not one sister could wear her own hair. 10, you know?
Yeah.
So,
you know,
yeah, go ahead.
In terms of the saying that we are our own worst enemy, we have to remember that there is no black person on the planet who's able to validate that statement based upon his own experience. With a person that we are our own worst enemy, or we treat each other so badly, my question is, how do you know? How do you know this to be true? You know it to be true based upon information from your oppressors, who controls your media image, who controls your statistics, and their goal, their objective is to keep you demoralized and to keep your aggression against yourself. So therefore, your perception of your people is inherently flawed. Now here's what happens. Once a person is programmed to believe the worst, then that's all they see. And they believe the little things they see verifies the media depiction of them, and this is not the case. They've been programmed to believe this.
And because of that, the images that we are bombarded with, we're bombarded 24/7, 365, with these images and notions of us as inferior, us as less than, you know, and it's just like the Christianity. I know that brothers and sisters, you know, They try to, in their desperation, to make Christianity their own. They talk about Ethiopia. They talk about this and that and the other. They have Bibles that have some of our faces in it and so forth. But to me, the damage has already been done over the hundreds of years of Christianity being imposed upon us with a Caucasian image. with Caucasians throughout the book. When you get a King James version of the Bible and they have those pictures at the beginning and probably a few in the middle and some pictures at the end of some people who they say this is who these people are, they're all Caucasian. You know,
white society always used psychological warfare against us, and the Bible was a tool for psychological warfare. And for example, what you just hit on, we know irrefutably that when the early white Christian converted Africans into Christians, it had nothing to do with saving African souls so the Africans may join them in the afterlife in heaven. We know this to be true because the early Christians believed that Africans had no souls, and they believed that heaven was for whites only. In fact, they believed that the thought of an African going to heaven was as blasphemous as a dog going to heaven. This is the reality. So when you look at things as they truly were, you can say without a doubt that it had nothing to do with to saving our souls. It was, as you said, it was to indoctrinate the image of a white God into our subconscious minds. It created an admiration towards whiteness, a profound admiration towards whiteness that then subconsciously transfers over to white people. So it made the Africans more docile, subservient towards white people. It made them into better slaves.
Yes.
And it made them easier to colonize.
And you look at probably the best movie, of course, to look at in that regard would be Nat Turner, you know, Birth of a Nation, the Nat Turner story, because as he's reading this and as he's saying this to other areas within his, you know, group, that he would go to his captor would take him to other so-called plantations so he can give them the sermon. And every time the sermon was, obey. Obey your masters as if you would obey me. All of this stuff. And so it's making us saying, you know, I can't go against him because he's connected with God, and God has told me to obey them, to do the work as diligently, you know, even when they're not looking, to be righteous, to make sure so I don't run away, I don't sabotage, I don't do nothing. I adhere to what the gospel is telling me to obey, because I will get my reward in the by and by. I will get my reward when I leave this earthly plane and I go into the, you know, to the heavenly plane. I will get my reward, you know. And so they consistently beat us down with this. And unfortunately, our people believe this.
Yes.
In fact, we are more Christian than the Christian, than Europeans, anywhere on the planet. We are more Christian than they in Africa. We are more Christian in everywhere we are. Oh, man, in
Africa, yes, they are strong Christians. I mean, I've had some experience where the African get almost violent with me for speaking against Christianity. Now, I know that doesn't represent all, but I meet a lot of brothers who are Latin also. But there are those who are just so brainwashed by Christianity. When I first experienced it, I was in my 20s. I was much younger. And it was heartbreaking when I started to meet my African brothers who were born in the continent, and to learn that they were just as brainwashed, if not stronger, more brainwashed than many of we in America.
I know.
Almost have a militant stance about Christianity. And when you try to show them evidence, they rebuke it, they're angry.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, big time. In fact, we're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we'll have this discussion further. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You can give us a call at 215-490-9832 and be a part of this conversation with my co-host, Brother Franklin Jones, the Black Matrix, the Black People Matrix. We'll be right back.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Ayo.
Yeah.
Ayo.
All right.
Ayo.
Yeah.
Ayo.
See, all you really gotta do is tell me that
should love me. Maybe that will cancel out all the wrong ways you rub me. I can't understand why you wanna act ugly when I know that you miss me. Kiss me, baby, hug me. The thoughts of a human are so hard to bear when the uncivilized enterprise in despair. Video clips make us shake our derrieres while the big screen screams. Throw your guns in the air. Hollywood, Hollywood, we all want the glamour. Glitz, diamonds, and gold. Tricks, abracadabra. What's the matter, Copa Ladder? That really makes me wonder how we manage to move around in the world of anacondas. Gotta think like a chess player, Mr. Taxpayer. Seek the truth, we abuse you, suffer soothsayer. School fools on YouTube and chat room players. Cartoons and buffoons of all assorted flavors. You used to diss my mama when you called the ancient mama. Must have seized, got a need, so you call me mountain climber. Quest feed the need of the Da Vinci code finder. Proceed to lead as the original designer. Ayo, ayo, ayo. Bow down the clown, stuff your knees up. I don't hoe around, so no cheese. Peace to all my peeps who could keep up. Cause I'm leaping over them boundaries. Indigestion in the belly of the beast. New direction, heading straight for the east. You know, life is painstaking when they have what's ancient. So who's that wrecking that microphone? Shot blessed, giving headrest to backbones. F-popper, if he was a rolling stone. Cause sisters know how to read up. Damn right we are. So what's your sexuality? Intellectual abnormality. It's your religion causing them casualties. So bow down to the flower, to your gods of woe. Major slave ships played your woman like a hoa. Wrote it in your books and we bought it in the stores. Hickory, dickory, slippery dots. Go to bed with the feds and they have crooked cops. Put the lead to the head if their agenda stops. So keep a bulletproof goose and a crew of hard rocks. Ayo, ayo. Ayo, 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 ayo. He's wheezing and she's coughing. We all stuck in the land of the lost, man. They trying to stick us into them coffins. So proceed to lead with caution. Misdemeanor's getting meaner and his grass ain't greener. First or second class plane crash, got Jesus. Y'all need gas from who? These to beamers. Watch them as they laugh and take us to the cleaners. Read between the lines if you want some definition. They fired the grid, so we led through intuition. Better watch your kids when on the net they fishing. How you rocking rims and you ain't got a pot to piss in? Lord have mercy on these folks. They got a mind so blind and we all got jokes. We just want piece of bacon from that stroke. Divorce rate sky high cause we ain't evenly yoked. Yo. Signs number 9, numerology completion. Beeping through your mind like blinds that are Phoenician. Seek hard, you find what I find I'm keeping. Don't be alarmed, just keep your arms reaching. Ayo, 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 ayo.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Also on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs Programming from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And then right after that, it is Buy Black 365. Buy Black 365. Let's Buy Black 365, and that's from 8 p.m. to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Tuesdays from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, 8 p.m. to 10. On Thursdays, Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, 9 p.m. until. On Fridays, 8 p.m. Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays, Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, with Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. And then Sundays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC. And then on Sunday evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, again, it's Time for an Awakening. Those are the programs right here on Time for an Awakening Media. We have a caller. Caller 215. Go ahead.
Brother Oshie, how you know, my brother?
Brother Joe, how you been, brother? How you been doing? Assalamualaikum.
I'm doing fine. Wait, we can fly. I'm doing fine. All praise be to Allah, Brother Oshie. I said, let me get my good brother car today.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Hey, Brother Oshie, first, before I talk about my subject matter, I want to say I've listened to the song you was playing during the interlude, and them brothers was putting their thing down, man. Yeah. I was in here bopping and snapping my fingers, bobbing my head. Them brothers was putting their thing down.
Oh,
it
yeah,
was
that's
positive,
his,
too, brother.
Yeah.
I love
oh,
that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's Shabless. Shabless on the case.
What's the name of it, Brother Oshie?
Huh?
Who was the artist?
Shabless.
Shabless. Okay, Shabless. I love that, brother.
Yeah.
I mean, they was putting their thing down, man. Yeah. I love that, brother. You keep on playing that, brother.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Keep playing that. I love that, man. Positive Shabless. Rap. I'm talking about,
oh, yeah.
About people putting out the historical things. I mean, I love that, brother. I tell you.
I appreciate it.
I loved it.
It,
man.
You bet.
You know, Brother Oshie, before I talk about, like I said, myself, I'm going to make a comment. As you well know, Brother Oshie, the Honorable Minister Farrakhan, he's been under attack over the last month or so by the Zionists, right?
Right.
And I just want to make a clear point of clarification because, see, one thing, when you get on the radio, it's always good to know, speak from a position of knowing that you're speaking from a position of accuracy, because it's very important. And again, I'm not saying that Minister Farrakhan is like me. Nobody's above criticism. But if you're going to criticize someone, have your facts right, number one. Number two, and make the criticism legitimate. Don't make it as like taking a shot at somebody. Just make it a legitimate criticism and have your facts right. Minister Farrakhan did not attack them Zionists. What happened, as you well know, brothers, you saw the picture of Minister Farrakhan and then Senator Obama back in 2005. That's what this whole hoopla was about. They got upset about a damn picture that was back in 2005, so they came out and attacked the minister. Well, if somebody came on to attack you, Brother Oshie, you're going to defend yourself. Somebody make a false, you're going to come out and defend yourself. And that's all the minister, he used Savior's Day to respond to the attacks that the Zionists made. He didn't start with them, they started with him. And that man had every right to defend his character. You know, because they came and attacked him first.
I agree.
You know, so I just wanted to clarify that point. And my point I'm gonna make real quick, Brother Oshie, on Jim Brown, our great brother and stuff, arguably maybe the greatest football player of all times. But see, and again, this is my criticism of Brother Jim, and I'm not going to use one incident because the brother did too many good things. But it just shows you, Brother Oshie, when you're dealing with this European. When you sit back and let him let you use you, he shows you the appreciation that he had for you. Remember during the past football season when Brother Jim let himself be used to come out and
right.
Trash Brother Colin Kaepernick. Remember?
Exactly.
So
yes.
This is the kind of things I want your listeners to understand what they did to Jim. A friend of mine called me this morning. He said, Brother Jim, you got to look at the Wall Street Journal from the day after the Super Bowl. He said he did a feature on Jim Brown where they just defiled that man's character, where they brought up stuff about how when he was growing up in Georgia, in St. Simon's Island, Georgia, about how his mother was a loose woman, how his father, I think his father had left home, and his mother was sleeping with all these head men and all this stuff. And I'm saying to myself, whether that was true or not, what that got to do with Jim Brown now? I'm sure his mother's deceased now. Jim Brown's what, almost 80 years old.
Exactly.
What that got to do? Whatever, like she lived, what that, white women ain't been hoes and stuff like that? So what that got to do with anything? That's still his mother. Whatever life she lived, that's still his mother. Then they added the fact of Brother Oshie about how his grandmother stayed drunk every day. And again, whether she did or not, what that got to do with Jim Brown? You know what I mean? Because whatever shortcomings his mother or grandmother had, like white women and white men don't have shortcomings, you know? But see, this is the thanks that they showed Jim Brown. They said, Negro, we used you to trash the brother. Now we're going to come out there and put all your family business out there and trash you. So my point, Brother Oshie, is our people never learn, man. When you get in bed with this man, he has no respect for you.
None.
He showed you just how much he appreciates you by defaming your family, your character, and stuff like that. And I hope Jim Brown but I understand that now, brother. Don't let yourself be used like that, because these people can't know, they don't care no more about you than they do about Colin Kaepernick.
That's for sure.
Simple as that.
All right.
That's why I wanted to bring that up to you, brother Ocean DeYoung. You listen to this, how they just trash this brother all over the place and defame this family's character and stuff, you know.
All right, brother.
We live in a time now where we got a fake president in the White House who's been sleeping with a damn porn star. They're going to talk about Jim Brown's mom and grandma. Ain't that something?
And now he's being sued by three different women for various reasons.
I know. But I'll close with this, Ocean. She again to show you our people how this European devil is no friend of ours. Now whatever you think of Bill Cosby, now these white hoes that they say he messed with, some of these accusations, 50 years old, that little punk white boy over there in Montgomery County, Kevin Steele, he determined to throw Bill Cosby in jail, right? But yet you got Donald Trump would have women come out and say he grabbed them. He even bragged about grabbing women, sexually assaulting women by grabbing them by the genitalia. He even got this white girl, 13 years old, when she was 13, claiming that Donald Trump raped her. Now, all these other white women that came coming out against Donald Trump, we don't supposed to believe their accusations, but we're supposed to believe all these women telling the truth about Bill Cosby. You see what I'm saying? See, just let our people know, brother, what time it is. When you're a black man in this country, brother, you get no justice, because that's why our late brother here in Philadelphia, the late, great Johnny Samples, used to always say, black robes, white justice. Black robes.
That's right.
Okay, brother Oshie. That's
all right, brother Joe.
I'm going to share that with you, brother. I'm going to keep on. I'll be listening for the rest of the show, brother Oshie.
I appreciate it. Thank you, brother Joe. Peace to you.
You're welcome. Peace and blessings.
Yeah, brother Frank. You know, it doesn't, you know, at one point or another, particularly if you step outside of the imposed boundaries that they have placed on us, then you're going to be attacked. You know, and I think Cosby stepping outside of the imposed boundaries when he put together a team of individuals who had some wealth to buy NBC. And they were like, and he was the lead person in it. And it seems like from that particular time on, you know, there's been that attack on Bill Cosby. But let me just say this. If the attack is real, if there is some legitimacy to it, then, you know, and he did these things, he drugged these women, he did that, then to me, he suffers that consequence. You know, I defend us to the hilt when we are right. But if we are wrong, I'm not going to defend you when the situation is wrong, you know. But I understand how this society will consistently attack our character and attack our situation. So I understand that.
You're right about that. When you step outside the narrative, an example of that I've seen was with the Nat Turner movie, which you mentioned earlier. Remember when he was promoting the movie? All of a sudden, they brought up some terrible things from the past.
Right.
And they've had black women following and protesting against
exactly.
him.
Exactly. Exactly.
It was amazing how, you know, they brought it up. But if you look at the details of this story, the director and the star went on trial for rape of a white college student. He was found not guilty by an all-white jury. Now, his partner went to jail.
Right.
But when an all-white jury found you not guilty, come on. Whenever a black man is found not guilty by an all-white jury, he damn sure didn't do it. But that didn't matter.
Right.
They got these black women together under these black women group, and they followed him and they protested him, not realizing that they were victim of a propaganda machine designed to hurt the movie. And it did.
Oh, it did. No doubt.
You know, they don't, I even tell people this, you know. I meet a lot of black people, right? And they're sitting there and they're putting down Black Lives Matter. I said, I don't say anything about it, because I know that the press is controlled information. If I see something, a negative report about the group, I never repeat those negative things, because I recognize because the press is controlled information.
Right.
You know? So I never allow the oppressors to manipulate my mind.
Well, you know, my contention is, hey, Brother Frank, my thing has been for a very long time. If Caucasians are mad at somebody or something, I'm down with them. I'm for them. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
My whole thing has been contrary to what they say. If white folks like it, I don't like it. If they don't like it, I love it. We got a lot of background noise here. We got a lot of background noise. Sorry about that.
Yeah. I agree with you 100% on that, because I remember many years ago when all of a sudden the white media kept putting down Nigeria. And I said, you know what? I love the Nigerians. If the white media is continually berating them, putting them down, calling them all these names, when my enemies attack one of my people, I never allow them to influence me. In fact, I like them more. There's a reason. There's an agenda for why they're attacking the people.
Exactly. But see,
even when we would get those emails that says, hi, my name is so-and-so, I'm a Nigerian banker, I need some money, I never even accepted that it may really truly be Nigerian.
Okay.
I've always felt that there was a mafia campaign to vilify these people. So I never, you know, I never allow the oppressors to influence my mindset about my people.
I'm in agreement. In fact, like I said, if they say it's this, I'll believe it's that. If they say it's that, no, it's this. See, I'm always contrary to them. You know, they can say the sky is gray, and I'll say it's blue. You know, and the reason...
Their power over our narrative is so powerful to realize it. They affect how black men perceive black women, how black women perceive black men. I mean, an example of this, you've heard black men or black women say, you know, I need to marry a white person because they treat you better. You know? And I've heard it. I need to give it a white person relationship, but a white woman treats you better. Now, here's the reality of that. That is the most stupidest thing you can say, because race does not determine a fact the way a spouse treats a person. The way a spouse treats them depends upon their upbringing, their experience. The way a woman treats a man could be, was she abused before? Was she abused by a man? What's her relationship with a father? There are many factors in psychology, but race is not one of them.
Right.
But however, they put out these propaganda campaigns saying white men treat you better, they're more nurturing, and they become a part of our reality.
It's
we
just like
functioning among each other, believing that we have the where with the lesser.
I've seen on Facebook a number of times. There's a piece that goes, I've seen a few times in the last year or two or whatever, where these sisters who have dated or married Caucasians, how agreeable they are, how, you know, and basically what it's saying is that because of the Caucasian man that these sisters are with, you know, these Caucasian men are so nurturing and loving and da-da-da-da, and the sisters are so giving because they're such a nice, gentle man, all this old bull, you know.
Yeah.
You know, see, it's because the brother is a brute, you know. She can't get along with the brother. He can't get along with her. You know, I remember this is what was kind of like putting it into our minds, the television game show, The Dating Game, where you would go out on a date, and then you'll come back and explain how the date was and so forth. And what I've noticed, almost of the American Africans who were trying to make that love connection, not dating game, love connection.
Yeah.
And who were trying to make that love connection could never hardly do it. We were always at each other, you know.
Yeah.
Very, very seldom would you see on the love connection American African man and woman making that connection, you know, which goes in part to what's happening with us in the society, because when you look at over 70%, damn near 80% of the children who are now born in our community are born without the father being involved in that relationship and being involved in the upkeep.
Yep. Sorry, let me say something. A study was just done by the CDC. What was it, the CDC? A federal study was done. And the study found that black men spend more time with their family than Latinos and white men. Okay? Even those who were not married to their wives, not living in the household. And they had a breakdown of the percentage, and the percentage showed that we do spend more time. Now, when we say that 75% of us are not in our children's lives, we must remember that we are getting false narratives about ourselves, because you control the people through demoralization. We don't even know, okay, they tell us that 13% of the population, 13.5% of the population in America. We don't even know if that's true, because our growth might be 23%, okay? But the goal of the oppressor is to always marginalize us.
That's true.
They're always going to tell us our numbers are smaller.
Right. They're
always going to tell us we're doing worse than we truly are. That's the game. People function based upon their perception of themselves. A people's destiny is determined by the stories they believe about themselves. When you understand how that system works, then you wake up, because you don't let nothing the white man says. I don't function off of the white man's lies. The reality is, I don't know how bad we're doing. I don't know how many black men are there. But what I do know is I don't trust the liars.
Right.
I don't trust those whose objective is to keep us demoralized. I don't trust those whose objective is to instill the white superior to our minds.
You know, I don't trust, let me say this, Brother Frank, I don't trust it whether they're throwing out something positive about us or something negative
about
us. What I look at is what I see visibly. What I look at is what the American, African press, the American, African news agents present to us. I take more credence in that than I would ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC, or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
But here's the problem, my brother. The problem is this. The black media relies to get their source from whites. So they're getting the same information from the same white oppressors.
Yes.
So that's the inherent problem we have, because the information they receive comes from white sources.
Right. No, I understand that too.
But how do they present it?
You know?
Everything that we get from white people, all information, is just like what we get in school. You know, when we look at our curriculum, we look at a history book, everything favors them and marginalizes us. We see that. That's how the entire system is built. The statistics will favor them. The narratives will favor them. That's how they do it.
In fact, what you're saying is so profound and so true. The Koch brothers are instituting some history within the school system that diminishes the impact of our enslavement, and kind of says that it wasn't as bad as it was. And
you know why they're doing that? They're doing that to improve the white image. Marginalizing our slavery, villainizing us, actually benefits the white image.
Right.
And that's there by, because the reason why they went after Bill Cosby when he tried to take over the media. Because gaining a major media, there's so much power in that, people don't recognize that.
Right.
Because the media influenced the masses. That's why the white man don't want a black man taking over major media. Influenced the masses. And it's a shame that when we had people controlling it, they the BET, what was the brother who owned Bob Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
He did nothing but hurt our image even more so.
Oh, no doubt.
He didn't uplift our image whatsoever. Not so long.
You know, and although he had some public affairs programming on BET, Bev Smith was on BET, Ed Gordon was on BET, and of course they were gone. It's just like TV One with Kathy Hughes, Fathead Roland Martin, you know, News One Now on TV One. You know, why it is gone, I have no idea, you know. I know it doesn't cost a lot of money to do that program. I mean, after all, they didn't bring a lot of folks in. The folks they had were all within the D.C. area, you know, to sit on the panel with him each morning. And then they used Skype when they wanted to talk to somebody across the country, wherever that was, you know. So, you know, I know that wasn't a lot of money to put it on, but yet they said that's why they got rid of the program. I think they got rid of the programming is because of the influence.
Exactly. You watch. Remember BET when after Viacom purchased BET, the first thing they got rid of was the news.
Right.
The news.
Right.
I remember going to where I was at 11 o'clock at night. I would go to BET and watch the news. You know, because I stopped watching BET because I didn't like all how to rap videos and all that stuff. But I watched the news, and I would get news from BET that I didn't hear nowhere else in the world.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's the same thing with News One Now. I don't really care that much about Roland Martin, but at least the news was from our perspective. And even though you are correct, they're getting the same news sources from Reuters and Associated Press and all that kind of stuff. But they were putting a more African-centered spin to the news,
yes,
to some
yes,
degree.
Yes, they did. Yes, it did. Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I, for me, I don't believe nothing that these people have put out, you know, because I know that everything is designed.
Yes.
To maintain and sustain the privilege that they have created for themselves at everyone else's expense. They'll spin it in different ways and make you think, you know, that all this is your fault, you know?
Yes. And that's why many of the white masses are so insensitive to the part of black people. The masses believe that black people are lazy, that they did it as a favor by enslaving us. Those narratives were created by a small group of elite, and it was spread to the masses, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, our perception of our collective state is a white deception. Like, for example, the largest recipient of food stamps in America are white women. The largest benefactor of affirmative action are white women. So, and most evictions that we use daily came from black minds. That's the reality, and this is all verifiable. You can find this information. But people, we are functioning based upon a demoralizing, fraudulent depiction of us because of people function based upon their perception of themselves. This is why propaganda says perception is more important than reality, because people function based upon their perception of reality. So oppressors maintain their dominance by creating a perception of the oppressed that keeps them demoralized and while bolstering their own people.
And see, the thing is that what we don't understand, and I'm hoping through programs like this and other programs that are out there, but you're not going to get it from commercial radio. You're not going to get it from, because all of those things consistently promote you to or push you to vote, to believe in the system, to advocate on behalf of those of us enfranchised to the system. You know, it is a constant begging mode that we're in to beg and plead for these folks to respect our humanity, to treat us right, to allow us to participate fairly. And, you know, I always say that America is truly the land of opportunity. I could never argue that an individual could come here and seek fame and fortune. That's ludicrous for me to do so. But what I will say, and I'll say undeniably, that America has never given equal opportunity. There is no such thing as equal opportunity, particularly in a society run by Caucasians. There's never going to be a equal opportunity. In fact, some people who are given opportunity is because they feel that they're safe to be given that opportunity, you see. Because they won't make waves. They'll take their success and they'll continue to glorify us. They'll continue to support us. They won't take that success and try to duplicate that amongst their brothers and sisters to try to chart a new course. They'll continue to come and support us. That's the thing.
That's true, 100%. You know, I want to go back a little bit and say more. A people's perception of reality is really ever accurate with reality. Our reality, our perception, is actually formed by those who control the narrative and the images that are put into our heads. They tell us who to hate, who to love, what side of an issue to take on by the information that we receive. And the white man controls most of the societal information we receive. And when spreading the information, he spreads lies that serves his agenda, perpetuates his superiority. It's a lie. White society sits upon a throne of lies. And one obvious way we know is when we look at how they depict the Egyptians. Those are just snippets of the system. The entire system is built that way, built upon lies. Even when we talk about their story about evolution, you know, DNA studies have changed the game, but many of us are still functioning based upon the old ones. Many of us believe that white people are albinos that came from Africa and they turned white. You know, DNA studies have totally destroyed that premise. Totally. It was always a premise. It shows that white people are not albinos, but their white skin comes from their Neanderthal DNA. The animalistic hair comes from the Neanderthal DNA. But what they've done, they created a narrative attaching themselves to our human history.
And they did so with a racist intentions also, because they call themselves the most superior evolved African.
Right.
Although in reality, we create most of that technology. It's
right.
an illusion that we live under. The illusion. Because they control the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So because they control the narrative, they create a false society. I know it's difficult for some to understand, but there are books, there are studies. You can understand this because I study social science or the social engineering of society. That's how you understand this. You know, it isn't just talking about the KKK guy who lynched someone. We have to understand how society is created and how the narrative that society believes mm-hmm. is controlled by the elite. And any narrative that's going to free our minds, that's the narrative they push away. They don't give it a national platform. That's why the very fact that they allow us to walk around with millions and billions of Bibles is absolute proof that the Bible doesn't liberate us. The oppressed doesn't allow the oppressed to have millions and millions of
exactly.
doctors that show how to liberate. But
exactly.
people are, I hate the word dumb, but people are not thinkers. They're not critical thinkers.
No. No, we don't use our mind. That's why I'm saying.
We
and,
don't.
And,
no.
and that's why Stephen Biko's quote is so profound, because it's real. The greatest weapon in the hands of the European, the Caucasian, the oppressor, is the minds of the oppressed, because they have the control of the narrative. They have control of media. They have control of imagery. They have control of words. All the things are in their purview. They're in control of all of it. And so, therefore, they put out what they make sure they want to put out there
exactly.
will continue to mess up your mind.
And, in fact, in the movie, for Stephen Biko, Cry Freedom, they didn't even show his true and most profound narrative. They watered down the narrative so it doesn't offend the status
right.
quo.
So right.
It doesn't liberate our minds. But
right.
when you meet South Africans and who know him, and knew his words, they will tell you that it was much more than what the movie was showing. It was what we were talking about, as how their power is the ability to control the narratives. You know, they've hijacked our minds.
Right.
In fact, there are black people who are walking around who have never experienced an individual thought that is contrary of what the white man's program into your mind. And they would sit there and argue with you that what the white man's program into their mind is true. It's a reality.
Mm-hmm.
It's because those who are brainwashed, I see that they're brainwashed.
Right. Well, I know you got to go, my brother.
Yes, my brother. You take care. It's always been a pleasure. And one love, my brother. I love you.
I love you too, dear brother. Peace to you.
This brother is the real deal. I endorse you 100%. I love you always, my brother. Stay strong. Stay black.
All right. And I will talk to you soon, Brother Franklin Jones. Brother Franklin Jones, the Black Matrix. Check him out, blackmatrix.com. Check him out on the internet. Go to blackmatrix.com, my good friend, Brother Franklin Jones. He's here every Wednesday with us. The mind-altering, the mind-changing information that is necessary. We're going to get here. We have a caller, 646. Go ahead, caller.
Brother Oshie, what's happening, brother?
Hey, what's up, Jay? How you doing today, Jay?
I'm doing great, brother.
Good.
Doing great, man. I didn't get a chance to hear your show earlier. I walked in and your brother from Philadelphia was on, but I didn't really hear all that he had to say. You know, your brother Franklin was just talking about defying who and what a people are. And that's the one thing that the Shirugu has been able to do to us since the conception of our existence in this country. He's always been able to define who we are in whatever the position is towards his relationship with us and with us against him. You know what I mean? He mm-hmm. makes it out to be that because we have a problem with our enslavement, that it's wrong, that we shouldn't have a problem with our enslavement, that we should be grateful, and that, you know, like you were saying earlier with these Koch brothers, who I think are two of the most wickedest human beings on the planet, and they shouldn't even be on it. You know what I mean? making it seem within the text that, you know, slavery wasn't all that bad. When you put slavery into its context, I will always say that it is the most horrible experience that people could ever face on the planet. To be enslaved the way that we were and to be brutalized in the manner in which we were. You know what I mean? I mean, the thing is, we don't even have an honest context of the brutality that our women face and our men face. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, take into consideration the blatant rape at will or whatever you felt like it of men and women. Just put that into the context. That once a girl was deemed to be of childbearing age, she was raped and forced to have a child with her oppressor. Do you understand mm-hmm. the psychology in that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Deep. And our people it's deep. You don't can't even
see. That's understand. One. Of, but see, Jay, that's one of the laws. You know, in nature, is protection. Your ability to protect yourself. Was gone from us. We couldn't protect. I mean, you could be the strongest brother, and here is your lady who really you didn't marry legally because they didn't marry legally, but y'all jumped the broom, the symbolic jumping the broom, okay? But yet the cracker wants your lady. So he goes to that shack. He kicks you out. He deals your lady. And if you make a sound, then he's going to put you on the whipping post. You know, bring everybody out and put you on the whipping post, whip your ass, and then have everybody to see that. Then if it happens again, he might tie you to one horse going this way and another horse going the other way and split you in half. All of it was fear and intimidation.
And you leave out the fact that after he would put you on that tree stump, he would then sodomize you also.
Yes.
So, I mean, yes. You know, the reality is, and it's unfortunate, that we don't even understand the psychological damage that this Shirugu has done. And for us to not to want to be able to peel away that damage, it shows the type of sickness that we are. You know, it's like I was telling a friend of mine, you know, who he had the nerve to tell me how happy he was that his daughter was marrying a Yoruku. Now, you know me, brother. I sat there for a minute or two. I listened to this fool talk and big up this Yoruku and all of that. And then I had to proceed to destroy him. You know what I mean? I basically went as far as to tell him his daughter was a worthless whore. You know what I mean? And that's just plain. That's just the real of it, brother. That's how I deal with certain situations. And I told him, I don't care how you feel. I don't care if we never speak again a day in your life. You did your child dirty by even allowing her to think that is something that was an option within her life to mate with a Yoruku. It's clear you never taught your child from an early age what this beast is and what this beast is about and what he's done to her great-great-great-great-grandmother. You know what I'm
mm-hmm.
saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, never come at me talking about how proud you are of your child being with a Yoruku. You're going to get it. You know what I mean? Now, the brother was absolutely shocked and dismayed that I, you know, had to go there with him because we know each other for a long period of time. But, you know, I had to tell him. You know, I would have left you alone and not said anything if you'd have just came and said, well, you know, my daughter is getting married to a Yoruku. But you wanted to come and say it to me and make it the greatest thing that could happen to your daughter. And that's what really irked me about it. And, I mean, the sad thing is that you couldn't pick it up that I was just sitting there just looking at you, just seething. And I didn't say anything to you. And then after you finished, you got it. And the reason why you got it is because you disappoint me as an African. Because you should know better. You can't tell me that you've read this. You can't tell me that you listen to this. You can't tell me that you observed this and all of that. And then you want to say, well, I'm so happy and proud that my daughter is going to marry a Yoruba.
Yeah.
And you claim to me that you know that the Yoruba is no damn good. Just because this Yoruba may have a nice job and this Yoruba may have a little bit of money, and you think that your daughter is going to supposedly benefit from it? Like I told him, your daughter, if she has children with that Yoruba, is maybe going to have the enemy that we don't need within the culture.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. He couldn't understand that.
Well, see,
but I knew he understood it. You know what I mean? Because he know better. But it's
but listen,
like we're at a point right now, Brother Oshie, to where as we're not defining ourselves, nor are we defining our reality,
no.
Nor are we defining our position in this country. It's just like you was talking earlier about bubblehead, big-headed Roland Martin. Think about this. With that show that he did on News One, which was a pretty good show, it gave some good information. Do you see the alumni of that program that has now become a part of the modern day media? Do you see that that show has produced someone on the world stage of blackness, like that piece of garbage Paris Bernard? Now, you know,
yeah.
I would just like to take my belt off and have a session with him for a good hour. And I know it would not help him, but it would just give the benefit of knowing that he was just treated in such a fashion. Because any time you could go in front of other black people and make the type of excuses and the pandemization in regards to this absolute psychopathic, narcissistic piece of garbage Yoruba that's in the Yoruba house, something really got to be fundamentally wrong with you mentally. I mean, it just annoys me to know the end. And then lastly, I'll leave you with this. Then they got the so-called sassy mama, Angela Rye, another one who I can't stand. You know, she gonna get on the television and say some nonsense about, I'm not for that boy. You know, using all of these so-called black linguistic phrases to make it seem like she's down with the so-called black culture. Or this is black culture. Do you see what our people do to us?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm more inclined with Angela Rye, you know, because you know, but let me just say this. Let me say this, because, you know, Paris Denard and all the other Republican conservative Negroes that he would have on his program for whatever reason to maybe strike some perceived balance, some false balance or something, or different perspectives or whatever. I don't give a damn what it was. But those folks have done a disservice to us and continue to do a disservice to us. And the fact is, when you said something about their definitions, in the book Yoruba, Dr. Mama Ani's great work, which, of course, I consider the Bible. I love that work, you know. But there's a part in it, she says, that what makes the European successful is we have accepted their definitions.
Yep.
See,
right.
that's why for me, Brother Jay, let me say this clearly to our listening audience. I don't hate anybody. In fact, I love humanity. But I also recognize that where humanity comes from, us. See, but let me tell you what I do hate. I hate Europeans for creating a system that has favored them at the expense of all others. I hate it, and I hate what it has done to us. I hate what it's done to our people. make us think and behave the way that we do, and blame each other. We're our own worst enemies. I hate that. No, we're not. This is what they have done to us. And I'm saying, you know, there is nothing that we can do, Jay, or listening audience, that there's nothing we can do to change their minds. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe they're superior. Everything in their world speaks to their superiority. There's nothing, even when we bring all the evidence, and there's a plethora of evidence to prove otherwise, but what happens? They dismiss it, they ignore it, because to them, they the shit. And everybody else is no count.
You know, the sad thing is, we dismiss it also as a people.
Exactly.
Because Google told us to.
Exactly, because like I'm saying.
That's the thing that frustrates me and upsets
right.
me the most. How could you dismiss a known fact that the Yavugu is nothing more than a beast?
Yes.
He's shown himself to be nothing more than a beast to everyone on the planet. There is no people on the planet that this no good, filthy, stinking bastard hasn't tried to annihilate off the planet if they are not of
right.
European descent.
Right.
Anybody on color on this planet, this European is at war. You know what I mean? And what do? They look for every way possible to defend their actions against people of color and say that it is justified. And we go along with it because something's wrong with us.
Yeah.
It has to be something absolutely wrong with the people who will not define themselves, who will not protect themselves, and who will not try to rid themselves of their oppressor.
Because
who are more than willing to integrate themselves into the oppressor's system and benefit from the trinkets of the oppressor and look down at those who don't want to be a part of the system. Why do you think that we haven't been able to build independence in this country on the manner in which we should be? It's because Negroes want to be part of the system.
That's right.
And have the trinkets. And when you take it into consideration, what do you have? It's like my theory on a prime steak and an extra prime or whatever type of high-end cut of meat. There is really not that much of a difference.
And you're right.
Seriously. But we think it is. It's just like, you know, I always tease my brother, and I say to him, man, you know, I like a hamburger every now and then, but it got to be grass-fed. You know what I mean? He said, man, there's really no difference between regular hamburger meat and grass-fed. I said, well, listen, to you it may not be a difference because your palate isn't that good because you still eating pork. Give up the pork and then your palate may be a little better. Me, I know the difference between grass-fed and regular beef. There's a slight difference just between a prime steak and a regular Angus steak.
Right.
There's a little bit of a difference. Organic chicken and regular chicken. There's always a slight difference in anything. But the point of the matter, when you put it into context, you're still being fed. Your stomach is still being nourished and you still hopefully being full. So why must you want a Mercedes Benz over a Toyota when the cost and the quality of the car is only different, that the Mercedes is more than the Toyota? More than likely the Toyota may last longer than the Mercedes. But you don't put that into context. That's the same thing about going to a black-owned store and going to a Yoruba store. Why not purchase from your own and help build your own than going to a Yoruba? You can see how they do another. Look at the guy at Amazon. He done put more businesses out of business than one could imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But everybody says, well,
yeah,
that's free trade. That's no problem. No, that's wrong.
That's wrong.
He has caused the loss of 31,000 jobs.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
All because of what, yes, he presents something, but the thing, the presentation is destroying others. He can't hire those 31,000. So now what becomes of that 31,000? These are the things that we don't take into consideration, but he's a success. The man has more money than he will ever know what to do with, will ever be able to spend, and in the process, in all honesty, will not do a damn thing for humanity.
No.
Will not do nothing for humanity.
No.
You know what I mean? He's basically a Nazi. And then lastly, you got this joker in the Urugu house that is absolutely, and I love it. I love it. It's one of the most beautiful things in the world is to see this no good stinking Neanderthal Urugu do what he do around the world. Anytime a Urugu can embarrass other Urugus and make them into the laughing stock of the planet, I love it. I have no issue with it. I hear people, black people, absolutely crying and in tears, getting upset about what this no good, filthy, stinking Urugu is doing. And I love it. Let it burn down. Let it burn down. We done survived everything. We'll survive this Urugu.
Oh, no doubt.
But then again, the funny thing is, they always looking for the mulatto. They're coming in to save their Urugu asses.
Yeah.
You notice that? Think about everybody that they talking about being a so-called candidate to save the daddy. They're all a bunch of mulattoes.
Yeah.
Because I guess they're going to do like Obama, protect their white side.
Brother Jay, that's the same thing in the movie Sankofa.
Yeah.
In the movie Sankofa, that's the same thing that happened with the Haitian Revolution of 1804. It's the mulatto. Yeah. In fact, Dr. Clark, before he died, he said he wanted to write a book on the bastard.
the bastard on the planet. And you notice how nobody hasn't done that defiant work on the mulatto and pointed out how the mulatto is the enemy of African people on a certain level. And I say that not with pride and joy, because I know some real good mulattoes.
Oh, yeah.
I always laugh with Jerry Ball. Yeah. I tell him all the time, you're the baddest mulatto I know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're the baddest. Because there are very few that are as clear as Brother Jerry is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and everybody talks about that little character actor, Jesse Washington.
Right.
No. Jesse Washington, he loves one thing. He loves that Urugu. He now, from what it seems is, he won him a Urugu woman. He done gave up a black woman for that Urugu. He liked being in the atmosphere and doing business with that Urugu. He's a fraud. He just speaks a good game. But in all actuality, he's not going to give up his Urugu position.
The imagery and the depictions and the commercials of a lot of mulattoes, a lot of American African men with Caucasian women on these commercials, all kinds of, and I'm seeing it more and more. You see two Caucasian grandparents with a little mulatto child, you know.
Yep.
You can tell us, you know.
It's propaganda.
You know, her skin is not as white.
It's just like, you're going to see, and any time you look at a new television program that has black people as the central theme of it, let me tell you the two things that you're going to get. You're going to get Jungle Fever and homosexuality in it, one way or another. You're never going to find any situation to where as that's not part of the storyline. No way in hell. It's the theme. Mm-hmm. It's the theme of now anything black. It's just like they're going to have a black overseer, a mixed family, and a homosexual agenda. And if you find anything that doesn't have it,
you let me know, because I know that is what is out there, and that's what's prominent. And,
right.
They're, you know,
they're pushing it. Right. They're pushing it and promoting it. In fact, they're throwing it down our damn throats.
Yes, and we're not fighting. And we're not fighting it because we simply want to say, can we all, in the great words of Rodney King, can we all get along? You know, that Negro did more damage with that comment than getting his behind me.
Well,
can we all
just get along? Well, no, I'm going
to
tell you who did more damage.
Who?
Toni Morrison. When she said that Bill Clinton was the real first black president.
You know why? All right.
Because he played his saxophone on Arsenio Hall's show with the sunglasses on. And because of that, there's an enamoration about the Clintons, even to this day, even how corrupt. I can't stand the Clintons. I hate them.
Yeah, they're corrupt.
They're very corrupt.
They're corrupt.
But yet and still.
And you know they've been able to get away with it?
Okay. Yes.
Because I don't know if you ever listened to PRN. They have a program on there, the Eutrice Lee Show. It comes on right after you do at 1 o'clock, man. Mm-hmm. And she has this guy on there named Charles Otell. And he's just broke down the criminality of the Clinton Empire, their foundation, and what they've been able to do around the world, Haiti, and everything, man. And, you know, if the media ever picked up and told the true story about the Clintons, they should definitely be
in prison.
But
they
I'll
should be in prison.
With this. Do you know you haven't been seeing Bill lately? Because I think Bill is getting ready for his dirt nap.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you haven't seen him in public lately.
Yeah, well.
No, there hasn't been. And the last time I saw a picture of him in
he looks
public,
bad.
He looked like a true Neanderthal.
Yeah,
knuckle dragger.
Yeah, yeah, he's looking.
And it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, he's looking pretty. Well, she ain't doing too damn good either, because she was out of the country somewhere. And she was falling all down, and they had to help her up.
But the black women love her, though.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Why do black women love her in the fashion in which they do? And you know who I'm really hoping that they save themselves from, who is just as vicious as Hillary Clinton? And will be a disaster like Obama, Kamala Harris.
Oh, Kamala Harris out of California.
She's a wicked whore.
Yeah, Kamala
she's
Harris.
No good at all. Anytime you come to prominent and done the things that she's done, based on you being on your back with Willie Brown, I've run far away from you as ever, because she was not known as nobody until the word got out in San Francisco about her affair with Willie Brown. And for her to be able to get to the position that she's in today, it's a real serious wicked tree behind it, and we as a people need to thoroughly investigate it until we find out the truth. And until then, we need to stay far, far, far away from her, just like that other piece of garbage, Cory Booker. Have a good day, Brother O.C. Hotep, and looking forward to Friday.
All right, dear brother. Peace, Jay. Have a blessed day, man. and Jay's talking about Cory Booker and Kamala Harris and all these others. I'm brothers and sisters, I have no faith at all in none of them. In none of them. And even though they may argue on what is fair and just and right in this so-called racist, oppressive-ass society, I have no faith in none of them. Politics is not what's going to liberate us. The Christian church, the Muslim mosque, all of these things are not going to liberate African people, are not going to put us back into a situation where we are self-defining and self-respecting. None of them. My contention is, brothers and sisters, in our situation is so bad, when we come together, you keep that in your back pocket that you're a Christian. You keep that in your back pocket that you're a Muslim. You keep that in your back pocket that you're a homosexual. You keep whatever it is in your back pocket, because the only thing we are discussing is independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. It's the only discussion. Anything else is BS. How do we achieve it? What are the things that we have to do collectively to make it happen for us? Make it happen for us on the continent where we have all these resources. Make it happen for us. Oh, brothers and sisters, it's that time. The words of Stephen Biko, the most potent weapon that is in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated to committed to helping to free the African mind. Brothers and sisters, I appreciate this day. I appreciate my co-host, Brother Franklin Jones, and I appreciate you. Be with us again on Friday. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Peace, family. Have a blessed and wonderful day.